Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I'm Maddie, your host, speaker, and very passionate speech-language pathology advocate. If you are new to the field of speech pathology or just want to stay fresh, this podcast is for you. Here, I will share with you my wisdom and experience of more than 23,000 hours of one-on-one skilled intervention working around the world as an in-the-trenches medical SLP and now as an assistant professor for an accredited CSD program. I want to help you see the big picture of what you're doing and connect those small dots of what you know and how to apply it in your practice, those missing links, helping you be the best, most confident, and most effective SLP you can be. There's no better time than now to freshen up. You totally got this. Hi, and welcome to this edition of the Missing Link for SLPs podcast. I am with Dr. Lynn Fraley today, who's a good friend of mine, and she is a neuropsychologist, and I'm excited to have her here today to explain to us what goes on in her world as a neuropsychologist. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you, Maddie.
Happy you're here. So a lot of the students I work with do not know what a neuropsychologist is. Would you explain to us who you are and what your credentials are and what you do?
Sure. Okay, so technically a neuropsychologist is a PhD in clinical psychology that has additional specialty training, usually a couple of years, depending on how you do that. I happen to do my specialty training as part of my PhD program, so I didn't have to do it as a postdoc as much. So, and what that means is, in addition to the clinical psychology curriculum, you spend roughly 2 years of education focused on brain structures and brain functions and what that means in terms of psychological functioning for patients. So it's the regular therapy type information with neuroscience added to it.
Well, so, excellent. And you are Dr. Lynn Fraley.
I am.
What is your scope of practice as a neuropsych? What types of patients do you work with?
Well, as a neuropsychologist, I'm also a clinical psychologist. So my practice has been around for 21 years this year, and I started my life as a developmental specialist. So my practice ranges from early childhood, like 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds, into the geriatric population. Our oldest patient right now is 82 years old. And it's a full spectrum practice. So in addition to neuroscience specific things like head injuries and dealing with things like ADHD and brain structural problems, we also have all the whole spectrum of regular clinical psychology things like mood disorders and depression and anxiety and eating disorders and that sort of thing. I personally specialized as a trauma therapist early in my career. So we get a lot of suicidal patients here and a lot of people who have gone through all kinds of traumatic experiences, like war veterans or survivors or witnesses of violent crimes, but also people who have survived things like car accidents and things that have crushed their brains. So what we do the most here, which is not typical for a neuropsych practice, is to combine clinical psychology, more like clinical psychology informed by neuropsychology. So what that means is we do a lot of work in helping people understand how to sustainably change their neural networks so they change the way their brain functions, which affects how they feel and how they function. For example, bipolar patients have the ability to eliminate the symptoms that go along with their mood disorder if they know how to construct the neural network that will support healthier brain functions so that they can live their lives without being medicated and without experiencing any of those symptoms and can be healthy and happy again. So we do a whole lot of that kind of work here. Typically, probably the majority of the neuropsychology field is involved in conducting assessments, writing reports, and interpreting those results. Forensic neuropsychs do that a lot in terms of assessing damages from car accidents or head injuries. And the outfall or the fallout of strokes and teratogenic insults to brains, like exposure to toxic substances. Most neuropsychs that I know of do not do clinical practice as well. And most neuropsychs that I know of don't do as broad of a spectrum as we do here.
So I know as a speech pathologist that has sat on a concussion team, for example, concussion board, and worked with concussion patients, we often get reports from a neuropsych. Can you share with us what types of assessments might be on that and insights from the from the clinical psych or the neuropsych's perspective that it would be helpful to a speech pathologist?
Sure. I think would probably be the most, so if we back that up, what kinds of assessments a neuropsych uses, there are dozens of assessments you can choose from. So it depends on the referral question a lot. So let's say there's a concussion involved. It'll depend on what part of the head was hit in terms of what brain section you want to assess. Generally speaking, there are some tried and true favorites out there. In the clinical psych end, we have MMPIs for personality assessments, and that's kind of the gold standard. On the neuropsych end, there's the NEPSI, and there's the Luria, Nebraska, and there's some standard batteries of tests. It's up to the individual neuropsych whether they use a standard battery or whether they put their own together specific to the referral question. And I think the biggest difference there often comes between whether you're working for an agency or if you're in private practice. So what the neuropsych will do is bring the person in, hopefully under circumstances where we're going to get the best sort of response and best kinds of answers, and then interpret those test results in terms of what the test results tell you about what part of the brain might be injured, what part of which connections in the brain might be injured, and whether they're repairable or not. And what the odds on that are, and that has a lot to do with the type of the severity of the injury or the concussion and the age of the patient. So the neuropsych will get specific on looking at memory or speech and language things or auditory things or process and reasoning or any of the executive functions, and then try to assess whether those are going to be treatable and to what degree they're going to come back. This has changed a whole lot recently with the massive movement towards understanding neuroplasticity and what that means. And we are just now really starting to actually apply what we've known for a long time, which is brains can reconstruct themselves if we treat them appropriately. So what you get from with your question, if there's a concussion team and you send someone out for a neuropsych assessment, you will get a battery of test results and a written up thing that tells you what's injured and how badly it's injured and how likely it is to recover. Not that I'm aware of, or at least not around here, do you usually get actual treatment plans as to what to do. That's probably more what you come up with after you get the assessment.
One of the things I enjoy most about you is you are able to take a simple subject and explain it well. We were talking the other day about, or this just before we jumped on here, about, tell me about the bean, your bean analogy.
Yeah. Right. So being a the process of practicing clinical neuropsychology is very much like being back in kindergarten, first grade, when you planted those bean seeds in little styrofoam cups, and the teacher gave you a cup and a little bunch of dirt, and you pushed your little seed in there and covered it up, and the teacher told you that that little hard chunk you put in the dirt was going to turn into a plant that actually made vegetables you could eat if you would just give it sunlight and dirt and water. And you totally believed it. And so for some days, you water the dirt with no evidence of anything at all until the day comes that your little seed is sprouted. And everything you thought was going to happen actually happened. And then the plant grows and you get beans and it's wonderful. And that's very much like working with a patient in repairing whatever sort of brain damage has gone on or reconstructing neural networks. You tell the patient there is this brain that you can't actually see, and that if we apply consciousness and if we apply certain activities to it and we move in a certain direction, that this brain is going to grow new networks, and we will know that because you will feel better and your symptoms will go away. But very much like that bean seed, you water it for a while and you work on it for a little while, but then the day comes when your patient walks in and says, I remembered where I put my keys and I slept through the night and I haven't had a panic attack in a week and a half. And it's like seeing that first little leaf coming through the soil and you're like, oh, this is it. It's going to be great. And from there, it just goes on. Once a patient learns how to manage their own brain function that way, truly, there's nothing they can't do in terms of getting themselves to think and feel the way that they want to so they can live the life they want to live. It's pretty fun.
That parallels so much of what we do in our speech pathology world, because we will have patients who come, for example, with word-finding difficulties, and they have troubles even walking up to a counter to ask for, you know, where's such and such located in the store. And when they start a therapy session with us, it's like that bean that's planted in the soil. We tell them that their brain is going to get better. We give them strategies, which is like the water and the sunlight. And we then teach them how to use those strategies in a world that's functional for them. So I see a lot of parallels with what we do, which is why it's exciting.
That's exactly right. That would happen even more often if more neuropsychs were clinical. And actually, after doing the assessment, made a treatment plan and worked with that patient, I think, at least in this part of the country, that doesn't happen a lot mostly because of insurance reimbursements. And speech pathologists are the ones who are reimbursed and neuropsychs are not. And so most neuropsychs don't do that, which is fine. I mean, it's great, but it's wonderful that there is this overlap because essentially we're doing the same kind of work. I do different assessments than you do, but we both are doing the same thing in terms of trying to repair a brain that is struggling somehow. So I don't really think there's a great big gap between us. I think the letters after our names might be different and the classes we took might be different. But if we sat down with the same group of people, we would probably be doing a lot of the same things.
Well said. The neuropsychs I've worked with in the past have been, when I get a neuropsych report, it adds more depth and dimension to what I can test as a speech pathologist. You, as a neuropsych, will test more areas than I may, and you'll give me more specific directions on, what this patient can actually do or not. So we do complement each other well.
I think what neuropsych might offer that's a little bit different than yours, too, is what understanding the relationship between brain structures, which has vastly changed since the Human Connectome Project has come along. And we know now that the whole brain talks to all of itself all of the time. So it's not possible. You can't have a focal lesion in just one place where you can say there's tissue damage here. But what that means in terms of disrupting the communication pattern within that brain is much bigger and much more complicated than that. Most neuropsychs will do a more of a global look at what all is being affected with an understanding of an injury in one part will affect functioning in another part that might be really discrete and something that you miss if you didn't specifically test for it.
That reminds me of the video you told me about when I first met you. What's the name of the video? How can our listeners find it?
Which video? The farm video?
The legend development neuroplasticity?
Yes, you can go to YouTube and put in Legend Development Center. And if you pull up, there's two videos in there, one which is written more for educators and one that says social skills and neuroplasticity. If you pull that up, it will, in a nutshell, explain how we're taking concepts that we know and putting them into practice in terms of helping people, children in particular, rewire their own brains with the belief that if we brought up children and people to understand how to manage their brains and care for them as much as they understand how to manage and care for their physical bodies, we would very likely not have so many people in clinical psychologists' offices getting help because they would know how to remediate those things themselves.
Well said. It's a good educational video that I've shown some of my adult patients, even though there are children in it. But it's educating the patients we work with on how to help their brain heal and how to help their keep their brain healthy.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Brains are developing and growing until the day you take your last breath. So we really need to get over our cultural belief that young brains are somehow more flexible and more plastic than older brains are. It's not exactly true at all. If that were true, I wouldn't still be working and making up new things all the time. So older brains are different than younger brains, but every brain is a plastic brain and every brain responds to conscious demand. So it's a very exciting field to be in. It's a very fun work to do. And I think that the name is a little daunting to say a neuropsychologist. I mean, that's a lot of letters. You could win a Scrabble game with that one. But it's not that. It's mostly a person who cares about helping someone else get better, who has spent some more time studying about how brains work exactly. That's pretty much it.
What words of recommendations do you have for a new speech pathologist who is going to start to read a neuropsychological report or wants to maybe meet and reach out to a neuropsych? How does she begin to decipher that report and then realize that neuropsychs aren't so scary and intimidating?
Well, I think what she should do is just pick up the phone and call. Most of us sit here in our offices largely unaware that people don't talk to us because you think we're intimidating and scary. And I realize all the letters seem like a lot, but neuropsychologists, generally speaking, are avid learners who've been in school a long time and they love to discuss their topic like anybody does who's got a career like that. And so to pick up the phone and make an appointment, say, can I buy you coffee and will you talk to me for half an hour so I can be better informed and I can better understand your reports? I can't imagine anybody who wouldn't jump at the chance to do that on my end. Because it sometimes is frustrating when we know we put reports out and we know that it's sort of foreign material to a lot of people. Sometimes the terms aren't all that familiar. Sometimes what we mean when we're interpreting them isn't all that familiar. And it can be difficult to put it in everyday readable language without missing some of the details. So to have somebody who actually is interested and wanting to know how to understand a neuropsych report better was like a rare and happy find. So I would encourage anybody to pick up the phone and call and say, would you just talk to me for a little bit so I can understand you better? Because that's on my end of it. That is one of the biggest hurdles to get over, is to take this knowledge that you have that would be really helpful and make sure people understand what you're saying in a written report, which is tough to pull off a lot of times.
Right. Well said. Any last words, any stories you want to share with us before we are done?
No, I guess, you know, what I would say the most is to just approach your neuropsychs or that part of your life, like forget the degree. Remember, that's just a person there who's been in school for a long time and who is happy to have a conversation, because behind the neuropsych part is the psychology part. And psychologists are famous for talking forever. That's how we make a living. So you should never be afraid to have a conversation with somebody who talks for a living. Just forget whatever it is that scares you. Sit down with the person and ask what you need to know. I'm positive you'll get the answers you want.
Dr. Fraley, you are indeed magic. Absolutely wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
I hope today's conversation has created some aha moments for you and motivated you to become a better SLP, continuing to connect some of those missing links between what you know and how to use that knowledge. Thank you for downloading the Missing Link for SLP's podcast. And if you enjoyed the show, I'd love you to subscribe, rate it, and leave a short review. Also, please share an episode with a friend. Together, we can raise awareness and help more SLPs find and connect those missing links and get the information needed to help them feel confident in their patient care every step of the way. Follow me on Instagram and join the Fresh SLP community on Facebook. Show notes are always available, so come learn more at freshslp.com. Let's make those connections. You got this.